This is Audible.
Genesis. Harry Stark Genesis Book Number 1. Written by Blair Howard. Narrated by Tom Lennon. Chapter 1. It was one of those wild nights in late November. The driving rain hammered the roof of the Maxima. The wipers banged back and forth, smearing water across the windshield. A mini-tsunami that swished first one way and then the other. I leaned forward over the wheel and squinted out into the blackness, struggling desperately to keep the car on the road. Chattanooga in winter is always a nightmare, but this was a particularly hard storm, and only the lightning that lit up the road every now and then provided any relief from the strain of driving in such a mess. I should have had the wipers replaced months ago, but I say that every time there's a storm. The car slowed, veered to the right as it hit deep water. I'd be better off in a freaking boat, I thought, as I dragged the car back into the center of the road. The white lines on the side of the road were inundated, 6 inches underwater. The broken yellow line at the center appeared and disappeared with each gust. I should have pulled over and waited it out, but patience never was my forte. Anyway, it wasn't my first time driving that route. I'd driven it so many times I could do it with my eyes closed. Sure you can, you dopey SOB. Any other time in such weather, I'd have taken a cab or an Uber. But there's a nurse's convention in town, and availability, like the visibility, was zero. Those nurses have no problem dealing with people with their guts spilling out, but ask them to walk a city block in the rain, even with an umbrella, and they'd laugh at you. Besides, the cabbies would much rather grab those fares than my grumpy ass. Oh, yeah, I'd called, but the dispatcher told me the wait would be at least an hour and a half before they could get to me. Screw that. As I said, I don't have that kind of patience. A small branch splatted across the windshield, startling me enough to make me swerve a little. Again, the tires slammed into the deep water at the side of the road, slowing the car, dragging it even further to the right as I fought the wheel. I let up on the gas and dragged the heavy car back onto the center of the lane. It was no weather to be driving, and I should have known better. Told Ronnie, no, not tonight. I'd been having a quiet night all to myself. The condo was warm and dry, and that's where I should have stayed. But my curiosity had gotten the better of me. I had my feet up on the coffee table, NCIS on the TV, a double-decker burger with fries from Maxie's half-eaten, and a glass of Heineken still untouched when my iPhone buzzed. I picked it up, flipped the lock screen, and growled, "Yeah, Ronnie, what do you want?" "Harry, you need to get down here." "Whoa," I interrupted him. "What's up?" "It's poker night, damn it. We need another player, and you're it." Ronnie Hall was a longtime friend of mine. I'd known him for more than 16 years, since before he'd gotten out of high school. He's smart, really smart. He won a scholarship to the London School of Economics, where he'd earned a master's degree in finance. And his idea of putting that education to good use was, well, there are few things Ronnie loved more than making money, especially when it involved playing poker. "I'm at the Sorbonne," he said. "Come on." I groaned. Ronnie went to the Sorbonne every Wednesday hoping for a hot game and trying to hustle whatever new kid walked through the door looking for a challenge. Sad thing is, he's not that good. I do enjoy watching him get his ass handed to him sometimes. The Sorbonne? It's not what you think. It's a classy name for a sleazy nightclub, and I call it that with deep reservations. It is, in fact, a less than lovely den of ill repute, the last refuge for every lowlife that can afford the price of a watered drink, and for many of Chattanooga's fashionable elite who enjoy slumming and even mingling. Yeah, that's my polite way of saying it. The joint, to use the vernacular of the 40s, not that I'm old enough to remember such verbiage, but I do watch a lot of movies, is owned by one Benny Hinkle, a fat little bastard who would steal the watch from your wrist without you ever knowing it was gone. Nah, I don't think so, Ronnie. Not tonight. It's storming, and... Ah, come on, Harry. There are new faces at the table, but there aren't enough people to play. I need you, man. What about Laura? No, it's busy here tonight, so she's working. It must be the weather. Come on, Harry. These two kids are guaranteed to be easy marks. It was always hard to resist poker night with Ronnie. He's a funny guy and fun to watch. The Sorbonne? Yeah, I even enjoyed that, too. I'd spent many a night there working the job, and even though the music was loud and inevitably awful, and the drinks even worse, I somehow felt at home there. Yeah, I know, crazy, but true. And I still spend more time there than I probably should. My excuse? I like to keep up with what's going on in this fair city's underworld, and there's no place I know where I can do that better than the Sorbonne, which is probably why I gave in to Ronnie's plea that dark and stormy night. Anyway, Wednesdays always seem to draw in a certain type of street mongrel, the ones who have nothing better to do on a Thursday morning than sleep in after a night of causing trouble. And even though I was no longer a cop, it was, as I said, my habit to keep an eye on them. My name, by the way, is Harry Stark. Up until a couple of months earlier, I'd been a cop, a sergeant homicide detective for the Chattanooga PD, and a damn good one, even if I do say so myself. So what happened? Well, I quit. Why did I quit? Number of reasons, the main one being one too many run-ins with the chief of police, a martinet named Wesley Johnston, an arrogant SOB if ever there was one. Another reason, I never was much of a team player, and office politics, you can have them. And besides, it wasn't like I needed the money, so finally, I told him to take his job and shove it. More than 10 years on the job, a master's degree in forensic psychology from Fairleigh Dickinson, and once again, I was at a loose end. Not. The shadow crossed in front of the car so fast I didn't have time to stop. I hit the brakes hard and swerved into the mud at the side of the road. Looking out through the deluge, it was difficult to make out the figure coming towards the driver's window, but as it came closer, I could see it was a girl, just a kid. Instinctively, my hand went for my gun and rested on the grip as she approached. Her hair, dark bobbed, was plastered to her head and face. The raccoon eyeshadow smeared above her eyes had run in rivulets down her cheeks, and she looked scared. Really scared. That much was obvious. What the hell is she doing out here alone in this kind of weather? I thought as I rolled down the window a half inch. Get in the back, I yelled at her, and I flipped the lock so she could open the door. Okay, so I'm a little protective of my car and didn't want the front seat ruined. She was soaking wet, shivering like a newborn puppy. I cranked up the heater. There's a towel and a blanket on the floor back there, I said over my shoulder. Get yourself dried off. She did. I could hear her teeth chattering over the noise of the hot air blowing out of the heater vents. What the hell are you doing out there in this mess? My car broke down. I sighed and shook my head. She just lied to me. It wasn't just the way she said it, but I knew. There were no cars on the road a mile in either direction. Not back the way I'd come, nor in the mile we'd traveled since I'd picked her up. I would have noticed. "Not got AAA?" I asked, looking at her in the rearview mirror. She didn't answer, but the look on her face said it all. Her lies weren't getting her anywhere with me, and she knew it. "Where are you going?" she asked. Her voice was soft, refined, and didn't match her disheveled appearance. A flash of lightning momentarily lit up her face, and she squinted. She looked older than I'd first thought. Her pretty face was drawn with stress and streaked with ruined makeup. I figured her to be around 21, 22, and on her own. Why do these kids wear that black crap around their eyes and on their fingernails? I thought, staring out through the windshield and the rain. It makes them look so hard. "Where are you going?" I said, glancing up at the rearview mirror. She shrugged, wiped her eye with the back of her hand, streaking the black crap even further. Then she took a deep breath, closed her eyes, shook her head, and said so quietly I could barely hear it, "Wherever you're going, I suppose." "You sure?" "I'm going to the Sorbonne. It's a bar. You know it?" She didn't answer. "I'll take you there, and you can have someone come and get you." Her eyes looked down at the floor and then out the side window. She seemed to be in deep thought. She finally spoke. "Yes, I know it, and that'll be fine. Thank you."
Chapter 2 I parked on the street in front of the Sorbonne. We ran through the rain to the front door, shaking the drops off our coats like a couple of dogs as we stepped into the, not light, that's for sure, dim? Yeah, and frickin' noisy. The jukebox was blasting out some weird, modern country music song, and I use the words lightly, by some faux cowboy I'd never heard of. Jeez, I thought as I looked around. No matter how many times I step into this snake pit, I never get used to it. The smell of stale beer and even staler, is that a real word? Cigarettes hitting my nostrils like a punch in the nose. Ronnie was seated at a round table in a darkened corner. Yeah, it was even darker, at the far end of the long barroom, along with a couple of wannabe poker sharks that I figured had probably learned their craft watching the World Series of Poker on TV. Both of them were young. Both wore glasses. There was an empty chair waiting for me. Gambling is illegal in Tennessee, but that didn't stop the regulars, nor did it bother Benny Hinkle. Well, not much. He kept his joint quiet, and we cops gave him a little space, easement, if you will. I'd learned more about Chattanooga's seedy side in that bar, and Benny, though not an official CI, confidential informant, was never adverse to a little quid pro quo. He was one of my go-tos when I needed the word on the street. I slapped the kid on the shoulder, told her goodbye and to be careful, and I left her to make her call and headed over to the table, wrenching my wet jacket from my shoulders and shaking it to get rid of the excess water as I went. The pool cues were all being used, so I hung it on the empty rack in the hope that it might dry out a little. It was right under a vent that was piping lukewarm air down from the ceiling. Too cool for it to be any good when it snowed, but good enough maybe to dry out my coat. "It's about time," Ronnie said impatiently as I untucked my shirt and pulled the hem over the M&P 9 on my hip. I got a little sidetracked. The words had barely left my mouth when the kid appeared at the table. Seeing her in the light really showed the wear and tear from the storm.
She must have been out there for an hour or more. Her face was pale, and she looked about ready to collapse. Ronnie checked her out.
"This is what sidetracked you," he asked. "You better sit down, kid, before you fall down. You want to play?"
"Oh, you gotta be kidding me, Ronnie," I thought, my head shaking in amazement. "Have you no shame?"
She nodded, grabbed a chair, and squeezed herself into the small space between me and the scrawny kid on my right. The wad of cash she pulled from her pocket was wet, but she flattened it out, a stack of 20s a half-inch thick, and placed it on the table in front of her. Laura, Benny's partner and barkeep, appeared at my side and set down a shot of whiskey and a beer on the table in front of me. I stared at it, picked it up, and sniffed it. It was scotch, not the watered-down crap Benny usually served. Laura knew better than that, but it sure as hell wasn't the Lafroge I was used to either. I smiled up at her and handed over a damp $5 bill. She winked at me and said, "I see you have a little friend with you, Harry. What would you like, sweetie?" "Coffee, please." Laura let out a hearty laugh. "Oh, really? You think this is Starbucks? If you want booze, we got booze. That's it." The kid chewed on her lip and then said confidently, "A shot of tequila, gold." "That's more like it. Anybody else?" "You know what I want." Ronnie, married though he was a harmless flirt, and she knew it.
"Yeah, tell it to someone who wants it, too."
Laura sauntered off with the usual swing of her hips, and Ronnie shook his head wistfully. Everyone thought Laura had something going on with her boss, Benny. Not true. It was all an act. She was happily married with two kids and a loving husband. The act was for tips and to keep the clientele coming in, which, in turn, made Benny a very happy man. It was a match made in... Oh, yeah, but it was still fun to watch her wiggle as she walked through the crowd. "So," Ronnie said, shuffling the cards, "ante up, $5 buy-in, Texas Hold'em." We all tossed our cash into the center of the table as Ronnie flicked cards around to us.
"How old are you, kid, really?" I asked, "and what's your name?" One, I was worried she might not be old enough to drink, and two, I figured if she was going to lose her money to us, the least we could do was call her by her name.
"Phoebe? Phoebe Marsh, and I'm 21.
Ronnie stopped in mid-deal at the mention of her name and stared at her with his mouth open. It wasn't a good look for a guy who prided himself on his intelligence. The kid shifted uncomfortably in her chair and lifted the corner of her cards to give them a peek. Her eyes stayed down, and she shifted again. There was something that the two of them knew that no one else at the table did, but I was sure Ronnie would tell me when he could. I scooped up my two cards and, shielding them with a hand, fanned them out. I had a 2 of diamonds and a 9 of spades. Crap. "Fold," I said, and flung the cards face down on top of the money pile. Ronnie smirked as he lifted them and straightened the bunch into a new pile next to the deck. Everyone else stayed in, and Ronnie dealt the flop cards. 9 of hearts, queen of clubs, 9 of diamonds. Crap! First hand, and I'd tossed 3 of a kind, and right then I knew I was in for a rough evening. Laura brought a second shot of tequila and set it down in front of Phoebe on a little white paper napkin. "What the? I didn't even know this joint had napkins."
"What's up with the fancy service?" I asked.
"It's from the guy over there." Laura nodded her head in the direction of a shady-looking guy sitting at the far end of the bar. His back was towards the front door, so all I could see was his profile. big nose, broken at least once, stubby chin, and pronounced forehead. The tiny slit where his mouth should be was barely visible. He looked like he was in pretty good physical shape, but the face was that of a thug. The girl looked down at the napkin and shuddered. That same look she'd had in the back seat of my car had returned, and it was clear that this character had something to do with it.
She raised her cards and upped the bid made by the scrawny kid to my right. If she had a good hand, you could only tell by the money she wagered. The kid had a terrific poker face. I'm not sure why, but something inside of me clicked. This kid needs a friend. Hey, Laura, can you bring a damp bar towel so Phoebe can clean up her face? I smiled at the girl, trying to reassure her that somebody had her back.
Sure, just give me a minute.
Phoebe smiled. It seemed like she wasn't used to people being kind to her.
I got nothing, the scrawny kid next to me said as he threw down his cards.
He took out a small notebook and wrote something.
You wouldn't be counting cards, would you? Ronnie asked.
No, Scrawny said. I'm calculating odds.
A man after my own heart, Ronnie said. What's your name?
The scrawny kid put a finger to his glasses and shoved them back up the bridge of his nose.
Tim Clark.
There was no way that scrawny kid was old enough to be in this joint. I'd bet my badge on it, if I still had one. But, like I said before, all it takes is a little green in the right pocket to overlook little misdeeds like serving underage kids. And this one, well, if he was even 17 years old, my uncle was the proverbial monkey.
Ronnie laid down the turn card, ace of hearts, and up the bet. Phoebe and the other kid matched. He turned up the river card, ace of clubs. The kid folded. It was now just Phoebe and Ronnie. The two of them were a good match. Him with his indomitable attitude and her with her casual demeanor. Laura came back, setting the towel on the table next to Phoebe's cards and placed a small green glittery bag on top of it.
I'm sure you'll find something in there that will make those gorgeous eyes pop, she said, gifting her with a smile and a gentle pat on the back. Then she was away, cursing and swearing at two guys who'd put their beer glasses on the pool table.
Laura had a big heart and had made sure the water on the towel was warm. You could see the steam rising from it and how happy it made Phoebe to touch it to her face.
Damn, I thought, whoever's been messing with this kid has really done her psyche some damage.
Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed that the man at the bar had disappeared. His glass was empty, and the coat that had been hanging over the back of his chair was gone.
Call, Phoebe said.
Ronnie smiled as he laid down a pair of kings.
Two pair, kings and aces. Your turn.
He raised his eyebrows.
Three of a kind, she said,
turning over a pair of queens.
The smirk on her face was priceless as she raked in the money and began to straighten out the bills. But that wasn't the only priceless face at the table. Ronnie was in shock. He hadn't lost a hand that big for a long time, and losing, especially to a little girl, well, it hurt.
"Excuse me for a minute,"
she said in a small voice as she stood up, grabbing the green case and walking around the table towards the back of the bar.
"You're coming right back, right?"
Ronnie said, standing up politely, his tall, slender frame towering over her as she walked by.
"I'd like a chance to win back my money."
"I'm just going to pee. You'll get your chance."
A crooked smile parted her pale lips, and there was a spring in her step that hadn't been there earlier. Ain't it amazing what one little win in life can do for a person's confidence? She looked back over her shoulder as she headed down the hall to the bathroom and smiled.
You want to play one without her? I asked. I was ready to leave. Three of a kind, my three of a kind, was indeed a warning. If I'd kept it, I would have lost my ass to Phoebe. And then, considering the sickening weather outside and the crappy drinks inside, I had an irresistible yearning for the warmth and comfort of my condo and a little 12-year-old scotch. "Ronnie," I said, "I'll play a couple more hands, and then I'm going to head for home." "You just got here, damn it." Ronnie was already shuffling the deck and dishing out cards.
"You have enough players without me, and I can't see the little lady stopping any time soon."
Ronnie won the round, dealt another hand, and by the end of the second hand, the two kids were finished. They'd pretty much been cleaned out of every penny in their pockets, along with whatever small amount of ego resided behind those plastic-framed glasses. Both hands had gone long, and I was becoming worried about our friend in the bathroom. She'd left her money on the table next to her untouched drink and the now-cold bar towel. Laura came up with another round of drinks for Ronnie and me. "Where's your little friend?" she asked. "In the bathroom. Would you mind checking on her? She's been in there for a while." "I hope she didn't run off with my makeup bag. That douchebag at the end of the bar stiffed me already. I'd hate to lose my favorite eyeshadow, too." She had started to leave the table when I grabbed her arm. "Are you talking about that ugly guy with a big nose and no mouth?" "Yeah, you know him." I suddenly had a really bad feeling that something was wrong. I didn't often have such feelings, but when I did, I always trusted them, and I was rarely wrong.
I pushed back my chair and headed to the back of the bar and the ladies' restroom.
I knocked and, without waiting, pushed open the door. There were only two stalls, both of them empty. I heard the rear exit door of the bar clang shut, and I spun around, ran for the door, grabbed the quick-release bar, and pushed. The door stuck. I held the bar down and hit the door with my shoulder. It swung open, and I almost fell out into the street. I was just in time to see a pair of feet being pulled into the side of a black van. The tire squealed, spun, burned rubber, and it slewed out of the parking lot even before the door slammed shut. "No plates, damn it, that figures," I thought as I pulled my M&P 9 from its holster and ran out into the rain. But I was too late. All I could do was stand there and watch as the back end of the van lost traction, skidded, its tires squealing as it disappeared around the corner. "Damn," I thought, "what the hell was that about? What did the kid do that they'd go to so much trouble to grab her? And where the hell are they taking her?" My shirt and pants were soaked. I shook my head frustrated, slid the weapon back into its holster, and headed back through the door, past the restrooms, into the main room of the bar. The two scrawny kids were heading out the front door, having left Ronnie pouting at the table. "What do you expect when you take all their cash so quick?" I said as I dropped into my seat. "You're all wet," he said. "What happened? Where's Phoebe?"
"Gone."
"Good. She left my money."
Ronnie reached across the table. I grabbed his hand.
"I'll hold it for her," I said.
Ronnie cocked his head and gave me a boyish grin.
"She's coming back then?"
"I doubt it. Someone grabbed her, and I'm betting it was that gnarly dirtbag that was sitting at the end of the bar." I scooped up the kid's money, and as I did, I noticed the napkin under the kid's shot glass. I moved the glass and picked up the square. There was a symbol drawn on it with an eyeliner pencil along with a phone number. "What the hell is that?" I thought. "What does it mean?" The kid must have done it when my attention was on the game. I turned it over and read the words scrawled on the other side. They were written with a blue pen. "Time to come home." The dirtbag at the bar had sent her a message. So that's what it's about, I thought. She's a runaway.
Ronnie, I said, that funny look on your face when she told us her name. You knew who the kid was. You want to tell me how come? I asked. You don't know? He asked, his eyes wide. I shook my head, waiting for an answer. Geez, Harry, have you been hiding under a rock since you left the force? Phoebe Marsh is Frank Marsh's daughter. And then I got it. The guy who just went to prison for that Ponzi scheme? The very same. Mars had stolen a boatload of money from an even bigger boatload of people, and in doing so had made a boatload of enemies. Some of those enemies traveled in very bad circles, and I had no doubt that most of them wanted revenge. Jeez, the kid's in big trouble.
I took out my iPhone and dialed the number on the napkin. It rang 6 times and then went to voicemail.
A frickin' laundromat? What the hell is that about?
I hung up. Suds and Duds. I knew that place. It wasn't exactly what you'd think it was.
I need to go, Ronnie, I said, getting up from the table.
Where are you going?
To do a little laundry.
Chapter 3. It was still raining when I got outside. I stood for a moment on the porch, fumbling with my car keys in my jacket pocket. They slipped out of my hand and landed in a puddle. Oh, great, I thought savagely. There goes $200 to get another fob to unlock the beast. I just knew it wasn't going to be my night. I squinted and stepped out into the wind and rain. The raindrops pummeled my face, stinging harder than a slap by a pretty girl. I bent down, fished the keys out of the water, and pushed the unlock button. Sure enough, nothing. I stuck the key into the lock and turned it, and the frickin' alarm sounded. Crap! Don't you hate it when it does that? I scrambled in behind the wheel, stuck the key into the ignition, shut the alarm off, and fired up the motor. The car hummed as the rain pounded on the roof. I tapped the screen on my phone, and the Bluetooth connected. Call Kate.
Calling Kate Gazzara's cell.
Detective Sergeant Kate Gazzara. Yeah, she was still a sergeant back then. Was my partner on the force, and a force to be reckoned with herself. I was hoping she could give me a hand with Phoebe's kidnapping. Well, what I thought was a kidnapping. Seeing the note, though, it's time to come home, I was beginning to have my doubts. Still, I figured I should follow up, just in case. After a couple of rings, she picked up.
What do you want? I'm in the middle of something.
Nice to talk to you, too. A hot date? Kate and I had been dating for quite a while. She's stunning. A classic beauty, almost 6 feet tall and in amazing shape. Slender, dirty blonde hair and a smile. Well, you get the idea.
Bubble bath, she said. I haven't had one in a year, but I finally managed to carve out a few minutes of peace, and then you called. So what do you want, Harry?
The thought of her naked in a tub was more than a distraction. Do you know who Phoebe Marsh is, Kate?
Of course I do. Who doesn't?
I don't. Didn't. Not until tonight, anyway. What's the scoop with her and her dad? They get along? She didn't answer. Hello, I said.
Sorry. I was taking a sip of wine. What was your question? Damn, I thought. Are you serious?
Normally, she'd be all over me, asking questions and poking around, wanting to know why I was being nosy. But she was either giving me the cold shoulder, or she just didn't care. Something was up, and I wanted to know what it was.
Phoebe Marsh, what is it with her and her dad? Do they get along, or what? How the heck should I know? He's in jail, I know that. And I know she's his only kid. That's about it. Maybe you should watch the news once in a while.
Come on now, Kate, you know what that's like. I need answers from someone who knows.
Then call your dad, she interrupted me, and ask him about Phoebe's father. I'm sure he can fill you in.
What the hell? Who the hell kicked her cat, I wondered.
Are you mad at me, Kate?
Silence. Okay, what did I do?
Why don't you check the calendar on your iPhone and call me back?
Kate hung up.
Uh-oh. What have I missed?
Technology doesn't scare me, but I do prefer to keep track of my appointments on paper, in a book. That way they don't accidentally get deleted and hackers can't access my private info. My spiral-bound calendar lives on the desk in my office at the condo, but I hadn't checked it in days. I didn't need to. I didn't work anymore.
I shook my head, wondering if maybe she'd put something into the calendar on my phone. If she had, it was her bad. She knew I'd never look at the damn thing, not even to check the date.
I pulled the car over in a Dollar General parking lot and grabbed my iPhone, opened up the calendar, and... oh, crap. There it was. I closed my eyes, but in my mind's eye, all I could see were those huge hazel eyes looking reproachfully back at me. I'd screwed up again. We'd been seeing each other for almost 8 years, and were both comfortable enough with the relationship. But lately, my constant screw-ups had been kind of stretching things, just a little. Damn it, I thought. It's her birthday.
Call Kate, I said quietly, feeling like shit.
The phone rang several times and then went to voicemail. I tried again. Call Kate.
Come on, come on. Answer the friggin' thing.
But she didn't. Oh, well, I thought. I guess I should let her cool off. I'll send her flowers, and maybe she'll talk to me tomorrow. In the meantime, I had a visit to make.
Chapter 4
Suds and Duds was a little north of 23rd on Dodds in the armpit between Fort Cheatham and Ridgedale. I call it an armpit because of the way the highway loops around Missionary Ridge like a little league pitcher throwing a curveball. Not the friendliest place in the city, but that didn't bother me. Well, not when I was a cop. Now, maybe a little. I eased the pistol out of its holster, made sure there was one in the chamber, not that I needed to. I kept the weapon ready to fire at all times, force of habit. Forget what you've seen on TV. If you get into trouble, there's never time enough to rack the slide, aim, and fire. That's the quickest way to get dead, I know. I knew Suds and Duds from my days on the force. It was a hangout for drug dealers, gangbangers, and folks who wanted to grab a fix and do the wash at the same time. As I drove, I thought about the paper napkin. Although the phone number rang the S&D business, Phoebe's drawing, symbol, or whatever it was, wasn't their logo. It was cheesy, a basket of dirty drawers with bubbles rising above it. Phoebe's drawing was pretty rough, hard to make sense of. A series of circles with points interlaced, one inside the other. I pictured it in my mind. What it might represent, I had no idea. Or maybe it meant nothing, just a doodle, the product of an active imagination of a rich kid with a bob cut and black nail polish. That didn't seem likely, though. She drew that picture and left it next to her money for a reason. Was it her way of telling me that she knew they were after her, and if they took her, she hoped I'd come looking for her? It was one hell of a stretch, but there was only one way to find out. I had to find her. I found a parking spot on the street under a bright light a block away from the laundromat.
Not that the light would stop the bangers from stripping my car, but it was better than the dark spots down in front of the washateria where every other car was a piece of garbage compared to mine. What is it they say? Thieves always steal from the neighbor with the best stuff. So I found a spot between an 05 Lexus and an 07 Corvette. I figured if there was any stripping to be done, they'd go for one of those instead of mine. Well, I hope so. I locked the car using the button on the armrest, stepped out into the rain, pulled the collar of my jacket up around my neck, and headed down the street to the laundromat on the corner. "Hey, buddy, you got a buck?" "What?" I stopped, turned, and looked at the guy lying in the doorway of a store that looked as if it had been closed since before Pontius was a pilot. He looked cold and hungry. The pile of dirty blankets he was lying on was sopping wet, and he'd piled sheets of cardboard, flattened boxes, on top of himself to try and keep dry, whatever small part of him he could. It wasn't often I'd forked over money to a vagrant, but this guy looked half dead. Even so, there was no way I was going to fish out my wallet in this neighborhood. I did, however, have a stray five in my jacket pocket that made its way into his hand. He was oh so grateful. Hugging the wall and overhangs from doorway to doorway, I finally made it to the bright lights on the corner. I jest, of course. The lights were indeed bright, but the place was a pig pen. Sleazy, dirty, where hard-looking women in too tight pants chewed gum while they waited for their panties fluffing in the dryers. In a neighborhood like that, a laundry stop was more of a dating service for losers looking for drugs and cheap sex. I know I was out of place, but I needed answers. The bell jingled as I walked through the door. It was crowded for a Wednesday night. There was a trashy-looking couple in one corner shooting up, and a young woman, just a kid of maybe 18 or 19, bouncing a baby on her knee while checking the messages on her phone. Jeez, babies having babies. A black kid seated on a stool in the corner looked like he might be a refugee from the weather. He wasn't doing laundry. He was reading a comic book. Hellboy. I had to stop myself from shaking my head. I didn't know him, but I knew the type. "Hey, kid," I said, "do you know a chick named Phoebe?" He didn't look up from his book. "Hey, kid," that's when I noticed the wires dangling from his ears. I tugged on one, and out popped the bud.
What do you want, old man?"
"Old man? Jeez." It took everything I had not to smack the kid upside his head. "Do you know a girl named Phoebe?" The look that crawled across his face told me he did.
"Nah, never heard of her."
He put the bud back into his ear and looked down at the comic book, pretending to read it. I grabbed the wire again and jerked the bud out of his ear, taking the iPod with it.
"Hey, asshole, give it back."
He half stood, reaching for it. I took a step backward. "She was grabbed by some grungy-looking guy," I said, dangling the iPod in front of him. "Big head, no mouth. You know him?" The kid looked around nervously.
"Gimme it."
He raised his hand, about to make another grab for it.
"I don't want no trouble."
His voice trailed off as he looked past me over my shoulder. I turned around just in time to get punched in the nose. He was big. I'm talking enormous. A frickin' Goliath. At 6'2 and 215 pounds, I'm no slouch. But this guy looked like the Empire State Building towering over the tourists. He swung at me again, but the punch was slow and easy to dodge. I sidestepped and threw a punch of my own into his gut. My fist sank in deep.
The Pillsbury Doughboy had nothing on this guy. His belly was a never-ending well of flab and blubber. Spit and chewing tobacco came flying out of his mouth all over my face. How the hell can anybody stand that stuff? Quicker than you could blink, my gun was in my hand and jammed up into his nostrils. His eyes widened into two white onions, and he snorted snot all over the barrel of the gun. I tapped him with it on the bridge of his nose, wiped the crap off the muzzle on the collar of his shirt, then jammed it back up his nose. "You're gonna die young if you keep chewing on that garbage, if the fat doesn't kill you first," I told him, wiping the blood from my own nose with the back of my hand. The kid behind me jumped to his feet and tried to scramble past me and out the door, but my other hand reached for his collar and anchored him in place. He was going nowhere. "What's up with you two?" I asked. "I just need answers to a few questions about Phoebe." The place by then had gone completely quiet, except for the hum of the rotating machines. The big guy suddenly came to life, took me by surprise, exploded into action, slammed the gun to one side, then spun around and ran out of the laundry, followed by most of the people waiting for clothes, all of them leaving their goodies in the washers and dryers. Boy, I thought, I never would have believed he could move that fast. Phoebe, so it seemed, was some kind of plague, and the mere mention of her name struck fear into anyone that heard it. I was now certain that there was something going on, and even more certain I was going to find out what it was. "Look, kid, I'm a private investigator." Where the hell did that come from? I had no idea, but it sounded good. "And I need to find her, Phoebe. She's in trouble and needs help. Now, what can you tell me?" "Private eye?" He was astounded. "You're kidding me. Don't even think about it. They'll take you out so fast you'll think it's still yesterday." "Private eye? Really? No shit?" "Yeah, really. Now tell me, what the hell's going on?" "You's already dead, man. They got an army, and they'll chew you up, no matter who you is or what you do." There are few things in life that I enjoy more than a challenge. A good scotch and taking down bad guys are at the top of my list, but there's nothing I like better than proving people wrong. "You think," I said, grabbing his arm. "Come on, kid. We're going to Denny's, and you can tell me more about this army." I dragged him out of the laundromat. The rain had let up a little, which was a relief after the beating it had given me earlier. We didn't say much on the walk to the car, but I did manage to pry a name out of the kid. "My name's Stitch." "What kind of name is Stitch? Is it a nickname?" "No, I was born with it." "What kind of name is Harry? Sounds like you need a shave or something." I shoved him into the passenger seat and slammed the door. I rounded the front of the car, watching him through the windshield, hoping he wouldn't make a run for it. He didn't. I got in behind the wheel, fired up the engine, and turned right onto Dodds. I glanced at the kid. He looked terrified. It was time to get serious. I opened my mouth to speak, but he beat me to it. "Hey, man, are you trying to get us both killed? These guys mean business, man. Look, I love Phoebe, but you're not doing her no favors by going looking for her." "Well, we're not doing her any favors leaving her to those thugs," I said. "She was scared to death running around in the rain tonight, trying to get away from someone. What was she scared of, Stitch? Who was she running from?" The kid just stared at me like I was speaking another language. "Come on, if you really love Phoebe." He shook his head and looked down at his lap. "I can't. They'll kill me if I rat 'em out. They don't care about anyone or anything, least of all me. And
My dad? I won't let anyone hurt you. Your dad. What's it got to do with him? Who is he? What's his name? Lester Tree. He kind of runs things around here. They call him Shady. Shady frickin' Tree, I thought, stunned by the mere thought of him. Well, if that doesn't just beat all. I just couldn't imagine that crooked piece of garbage having children. It was harder still to imagine that anyone would want to breed with the slime ball, but my guess was there'd been a lot of lying and huge quantities of drugs and alcohol involved. No wonder the kid was freaked out. That sucks, Stitch, I said. I'm sorry to hear it. And I truly meant it. Yeah, well, we can't choose our parents. Geez, ain't that the truth. I got lucky growing up in a normal house with caring folks. This poor kid, geez, it didn't get any worse than Shady Tree. The guy was a grifter with a passion for concocting stories and schemes that would make a nun blush. His looks were deceiving. He was tall, handsome, well-built, wore his hair in dreads, and most of the time he wore a blue do-rag wrapped around his head. His game was anything lowball. He cared nothing for the law and would do anything shy of murder to make a buck. So what is it with these guys, I asked? Drugs? Human trafficking? Prostitution? Why are they so interested in Phoebe? Her old man, of course. That dude be bad, man. Everything every street mugger aspires to be, except in prison. So what about your dad? Is he in on it? Shady? Ha! No way, man. That'd be way out of his league. I still don't get it about Phoebe. She's just a kid. Why is she so important? Her dad was going down for a long time. I heard he sold her to some dudes. Not for money, for protection while he be in the slammer. Holy cow. He sold her. What kind of man? Shit, he sure as hell isn't going to win a Father of the Year award. I got it. I shook my head and said, so trafficking, then forced prostitution? Talk to me about the dudes he sold her to. Where do they keep the kids, I asked, as I pulled into the Denny's lot and parked close to the building. I don't know. I used to, but they don't trust me no more. I took the napkin from my pocket and showed him the drawing. Do you recognize this? There was a sharp intake of breath, and then he said, where'd you get that? Phoebe drew it before she was kidnapped. We were playing poker at the Sorbonne, and some gnarly guy with a small mouth and a big forehead sent the napkin over with this message. I turned over the napkin to reveal it's time to come home, and the kid bit his lip. That's how I got to Suds and Duds. Phoebe wrote the number on the back. What does it mean? Stitch wiped his mouth with his sleeve and looked out the car window. I can't, man. They'll know I told you and kill me. The big guy in the laundromat, there's a whole bunch just like him. He only ran away because he thought you were a cop, but he'd be back by now and looking for me. They watch me all the time. I promised them I wouldn't say nothing. If they find out I did... He opened the car door and started to get out. I couldn't let him get away without telling me where she was. Stitch, please, I said. He shook his head. I gotta go. It happened so fast I didn't see it coming. I heard the sharp crack of a suppressed gun, and the kid's head slammed back into the car door jamb, and he collapsed, his brains all over my car. I lurched back into my seat, then looked out through the open passenger door. The big guy from the laundromat was standing in the middle of the lot with a smirk on his face and a gun in his hand. Son of a frickin' bitch, he killed the kid. I jerked my M&P 9 from its holster, opened my door, and rolled out, keeping the car between the thug and me. I could see him through the car windows, but before I could get off a shot,
He and the goon that was with him took off running down the alley. I thought about it, but I couldn't go after them. I had a dead kid slumped half in and half out of the front seat of my car. I'll get the son of a bitch, I promised the kid.
Chapter 5 I confirmed the kid was dead, and then I called 911. That done, I called Kate. It went to voicemail. Damn it. Hey, Kate, it's Harry. Look, I'm sorry about your birthday, but I need your help. I'm in the parking lot at Denny's. Kate, I'm standing here staring at a dead kid. Some damn goon just shot him right in front of me. It's Shady's son. So call me, please. She called me back almost immediately. Harry, what the hell's going on? I heard the call over the radio. Even when Kate was mad, she was all cop first. It's a long story and not a pretty one. Can you get down here? I'm betting Henry Finkel will be here any minute, and you know what that means. Assistant Chief Henry Finkel was Kate's immediate superior, and, as far as she was concerned, had an agenda all his own. He wanted her in his bed. Hang tight. I'll be there soon. I was right about Finkel. He turned up a few minutes before Kate and chomping at the bit, hoping to find something he could hang me with. But it wasn't going to happen. Not this time. Stark, he snapped. What the hell's going on? You're not off the force a month and you turn up at the scene of a homicide. Get the hell out of here. I'm afraid not. I'm a witness. Oh, don't tell me you shot this kid. Why would you even think that, Henry? Hell no, I didn't shoot him. You know better than that. The guy who did was a big, ugly goon. 6'7", bald, huge belly. I took a punch from him at the laundrette, suds and duds. The dead kid is Shady Tree's son. Finkel scratched his head and looked at me in disbelief. Shady Tree? You're kidding, right? How do you know he was Shady's kid? He told me, for Pete's sake. I was following a lead, a kidnapping, and... You what? You were following a lead? You can't do that. You're not a cop anymore. Back off and report it like any other citizen. He did. He reported it to me. Kate had a way of showing up just at the right time. I asked him to look into it further, not as a cop, but as a private investigator. Finkel looked back and forth at us. A private investigator? Now I've heard it all. When the hell did that happen? Never mind. Forget it. I don't want to know. I'll have someone take your statement, then you get the hell out of here and stay the hell out of my way. Private investigator, my ass. You got papers for that?
Working on it, Henry, I said, mentally crossing my fingers. He shook his head, exasperated, waved a hand in the air as if he were circling the wagons, and turned away, yelling, Get forensics over here before the rain washes away all the evidence. The rain had started coming down again, hard. Kate and I ducked under a doorway, and some newbie cop joined us, said he was supposed to take my statement. I told him okay and looked at him, waiting. He just stood there, looking uncomfortable. It turned out it was his first time. I had to feed it to him like a 2-year-old. Kate was amused, but not me. It was a sad end to a really bad night. The statement took at least an hour. Okay, maybe not an hour, 15 minutes. It just seemed that long, and then the rookie shambled back to Finkel, who glared at me the entire time he was being briefed. Come on, Harry, Kate said. Let's go someplace where we can talk. I need to know what the hell you've been doing. She followed me to the IHOP on Brainerd Road. It was late, and other than Bud's just across the street, it was the only place still open. We grabbed a booth in the back near the kitchen.
The food actually smelled appetizing, and we browsed the menu while the waitress poured the coffee.
"Thank you,"
Kate smiled as the waitress huffed and turned away.